Start the clock.
You, the one with that smile, yeah. Come over here for a while. Hey, girl, do you hear what I say? I don't have time to be waiting all day. Just believe that it's not all...
My name's Chris Lambert.
And my name is Travis Bean.
This is Film Colossus.
Your guide to movies.
Today we have... 60 minutes to talk about Megan.
60. That's the amount of time I wish Megan had spent dancing in this movie.
Actually, we'll get into the
dancing,
just like the meme like potential for this movie.
I know.
And like leaning into the meme.
Oh, Chris, I have so much to say. You don't even know.
Lean into the meme, Travis.
Yeah, that's hashtag right there. Let's save the discussion.
Yeah. When did you first, do you remember your first like awareness of this movie?
Yeah. I mean, I remember when my wife and I love watching trailers. Like whenever we hop on, like if there's ever like a period of time where like, it's not enough time to watch a movie and there's no TV shows we want to watch, like let's get on YouTube and watch trailers. Like you spend like a half hour watching trailers. So I definitely remember the trailer. I guess I don't know if there was like some gif of Megan dancing before that, but I remember seeing the trailer and seeing the dancing and having like, I was like on the edge of like, this could be like super goofy and fun, or this is like, you know, some 50-year-old guy was like, you got to put a robot in our movie dancing. The kids will love it. So like, I was like, it could be terrible. But I was holding out hope for it because of that.
I was the opposite route. I didn't know anything about the trailer. I just saw a bunch of people reacting to the GIF on Twitter. Somebody did like it's a super cut, like in quotes, because it's not long. It's just they took out the cross cutting of David running down the hallway. Mm-hmm. So it's just like Megan's dancing in one smooth GIF. And I was like, what the hell is this? And I think it was a very successful like social media marketing campaign because everybody was a little like, that has so much potential to be amazing or so bad it's amazing or like I have to see what this is.
I just thought about all of the old people who were just like hung their heads and went, oh my God, like what is happening to movies? Like robots are doing TikTok dances now.
Yeah, that's what it felt like, right? I guess that was kind of some of the expectation that I had, was that it might lean a little more heavily into some like influencer TikTok, like social media kind of commentary and drama,
right?
Which I don't think we got any.
Like, yeah, that is weird. Like TikTok wasn't really a part of the movie, like other than the girl. I have to like keep track of everybody's names, which I'm usually terrible at.
I know.
Katie.
Yeah, Katie.
Katie, when she teaches the girl to dance, like, oh, like this is like the TikTok moment. Like this is where the seed is planted, but like it never came up again. So yeah, it was kind of weird that TikTok wasn't really a part of anything.
Yeah, and it's not. I mean, I guess we all kind of assumed, not we all, but like you and I assumed TikTok because like people at this point, maybe not people, but a lot of people at this point assume or correlate like TikTok dances and. Mm-hmm. There seemed to be no other context to what Megan was doing aside from like, oh, she's like a young doll Zoomer kind of thing. She would be into TikTok, right? Just kind of a base assumption and missed opportunity.
Yeah. Well, yeah. So I guess we're still in this section of the show. We're kind of discussing expectations of the movie. So like, I think that was, you're generally describing the tone as like, yeah, old people are probably like annoyed by this or think it's dumb. Like it just represents the fall of culture, or like the vapidity. Is vapidity a word? Vapidness?
Can be.
Sure. Of social media. But I think a lot of people were like kind of saw the potential for something campy, and maybe it would be kind of a commentary on TikTok and social media. But beyond that, we didn't really know. And I guess what a lot of people maybe didn't expect is it's much more of a commentary on AI. I guess people probably did expect that, but they probably expected more social media.
Yeah, I was thinking more social media, even like what was the AI Twitter bot a few years ago that they released? God. And they're like, she'll learn as people communicate with her. And she just became like racist and bigoted and saying such awful things. They had to delete the whole thing. It's not like Megan has some aspects of that, but I thought maybe they'd lean a little more into that. And I didn't watch any of the other trailers. I don't know if I ever watched the trailer. I think I was kind of sold on the GIF and didn't want to know anything more.
That's a good way to be.
Yeah. So the one time I was in theaters and they're like showing a trailer, I just kind of closed my eyes and put my hands over my ears, which has to look weird to other people. But I saw some of the viral marketing they were doing where they had the girls dressed up as Megan just out and about in New York City doing the dances.
That's
pretty funny.
That's a smart move. That is the way this movie should be marketed.
Yeah, I think they understood that it had that social impact and it's going to be something else where people see the dance. But they leaned into the dance again.
Yeah, you're right. For that reason, they shouldn't have done it. They shouldn't sell us a product that I didn't get what I asked for, you know? What I was saying.
I thought it was going to be... So that was... I was going into the movie thinking that it was going to be a little more... campy, not like Child's Play campy, but maybe a little more bouncy in terms of like the energy and tone of it. I did not expect what we ended up getting.
And I think that was my hint up of the movie. Like immediately the first 15 minutes I thought were pretty rough. Just setting up the whole story and Katie's parents dying. Like, it was moving very fast and it felt a little choppy in a way that, like, I don't think of campy movies being. Like, I think of campy movies really flourishing in moments and being melodramatic and flashy. But, like, there was something about the beginning of this that felt like a shitty TV show or something. Like, jump from this to that to this. All right, we set that up. We're good. Okay. And it just, like... And I think there are definitely parts of the movie that are a little more campy, just inherently. Like, it is a dancing robot girl. And there is, like, some crazy robot that Gemma is building in her basement that can just, like, is incredibly powerful. Like, there's all, like, weird stuff like that that is inherently campy. But the movie never really feels infused with that kind of energy, which I think hurt it a lot.
Yeah, the first... I thought the opening scene, I had mixed energies with the Katie and her parents in the car, where I liked the style of it and the presentation of it, but the dialogue didn't really ring all that true to me. Yeah. Like the mom's being a little mean, the dad's being a little like...
Every parent pointed. In this movie is mean.
Yeah, there's a lot of...
Every adult is an asshole.
There's a lot of parental hangups. And then even like Gemma is kind of like a...
She's terrible.
She's terrible, but also like infantilized. Like she hasn't really grown up. So there's a strange... I mean, it kind of makes the movie almost more interesting to me, but the adults are pretty terrible. And then the snowplow accident, I was like, okay, this is going to be like a little creative. I haven't seen like that shot of a snowplow coming through the snow, hitting somebody head on. All right, let's see how creative this gets. And yeah, that opening scene where they're building Megan in the basement just felt like something that I would see from like a CW show in terms of like the dialogue, how the elements went. And that can be good for the cult aspects, the like cheesy aspect, like giving it some of that life, like the campy element.
I agree. Like, you can go the cheesy route. I have no problem with cheese. I love cheese. But there's a difference between something I think that does it well and what we're seeing here. And to me, it's like kind of an editing thing, like dialogue. I feel like the great campy movies like have ridiculous dialogue and to the point dialogue, but it's infused with some sort of energy. It flow, like people's words flow in and out of each other. The way we cross cut between moments, the way scenes are montaged or edited together, like there can just be a certain rhythm that really works. And that was really disappointing me immediately about this movie. It's like, I could tell it didn't really have that. So the beginning moments of the movie just feel like exposition, like setting this up, setting that up, setting this up. Like you're just kind of collecting your bearings before we jump into the shit storm that is the movie, which like is fine. Like every movie has to go through those steps, I guess, when you're setting up a crazy universe like this, but it can just be done better and with more energy, more flow. And it just didn't really have it.
No, it felt, I think my big criticism of the movie is that it did feel almost safe in a lot of ways, or like by the numbers in a lot of ways, which we're gonna, I mean, maybe we can just transition into some of it now, but like the deaths were something to where like in a horror movie, I feel like the monster kind of defines how creative, maybe not even how creative, but like the style with which like the deaths happen.
Yeah.
And so you see like the difference between like Freddy Krueger being somebody that invades dreams versus Michael Myers being somebody that's like small town home invader, and how each of those movies leans into the style of its character to give you kind of unique horror aspects. Even seeing something more recent, like Hereditary in some ways, gets into kind of the supernatural, the culty. It's doing some unique things into how the deaths happen in that movie. And with Megan, she's this advanced AI robot with all of these capabilities and capacities, and the deaths felt very lacking in leaning into that creativity and style. Like anybody can use like a weed sprayer or like weed killer sprayer. Anybody can take like a blade and stab somebody. That's the main deaths that we got in the movie. Or she just chased a kid, like kind of creepily chased a kid and he fell down a hill. There's nothing that I felt like was stylistically creative in that way that leaned into Megan. And that's how I feel about what we're talking with the introduction and some of the exposition. Like the exposition can be really creative or stylized. And this just felt like, oh, we're putting Megan together and the boss comes. He doesn't want it. Oh, it fails. Like the boss is unhappy. That's the setback. So, it's like, where's the style?
So in your mind, she should be using her AI intelligence to come up with like inhuman ways of killing people, basically.
That could be part of it, or just like more. We see her control electronics during the movie.
Okay, sure.
Like
that'd be cool.
She shuts down the entire alarm system for like a whole corporate headquarters. she drives.
Carjacks a Tesla.
Yeah, she carjacks a car by like tapping into the computer system, I guess, and like driving it via the computer, which is cool. But like, could she kill somebody with a Roomba? Like, what's that look like? Like, how does she get more creative leaning into that? I feel like that's where a movie like this could really flourish and showcase its abilities.
I'm with you on that a little bit. Like, I agree on the flourish part. Like, if the movie really wanted to go for it and become something like really wacky, I do like that. Like, please let a Roomba kill somebody in the next Megan movie. Like, I'm begging you. God, that's making me think, actually. I want to jump back to our conversation, but like, future iterations of this movie could just be like the next model, like Tiffany, you know, like whatever doll that they substituted next.
Yeah, that could be like pretty funny. Megan, guys. Tiffany.
Guys, hit us up. Xander. We got the Roomba idea. We got the Tiffany idea. We can take this to the next level.
I tweeted at Jason Blum. I was just like, you know, have some ideas for the next movie.
But I will say that I enjoyed the kill scenes. I agree with you that they could have been a little more stylized. Like they could have done a little more with it. But I thought all the kill scenes were like, I love horror movies. Like, I really, really love horror movies. As Chris knows, I watched Terrifier 2 recently, and it became one of my absolute favorite movies ever. And the death scenes in that movie are absolutely bonkers. Like, I really love that kind of stuff. And I thought this movie actually did a pretty good job. Like, some interesting, unique stuff, like ripping off a child's ear. Like, that's a pretty bold move. the whole, like, woman in the shed with what is she spraying on her, like weed spray or something?
Yeah, like weed killer.
You said it, but I couldn't remember. Like, I liked all that stuff. I agree, it's not necessarily like AI powered, but like, I enjoyed it. I think more for me, what the issue was is that the, and it sounds like I'm complaining a lot about this movie, but like, I mostly think this movie like was there and was good, but like kind of misses the mark. Like, it's just missing some elements that would have made it much better. And I think the biggest thing it's missing is that, like, you're talking about the death scenes of Megan not being AI powered, not really being part of her uniqueness enough to gain gravitas and like have that kind of power. Like, you should feel something when she's killing people. I think more for me, what it was is that the characters just aren't set up well enough. Like, we don't spend enough time with them for these murders to then become something substantial and meaningful. Like in my mind, this is why I love horror movies, because they're the best, the absolute best at defamiliarizing. You're going to hear us say that word a lot. And that defamiliarizing is taking something familiar and making it unfamiliar. So horror movies do it all the time, like something like The Babadook. It's about grief. And a unique way to explore grief is to create this monster that becomes a menace and is like lurking in the shadows, and you feel like you could die at any moment. Like, horror movies have that capability to take these inherent fears that we have and blow them up to life-threatening proportions. And I thought that this movie had such a great opportunity for that, to kind of explore, what are the consequences of introducing AI? What are the consequences of letting a robot raise your kid instead of you doing the work yourself? Like, those are all questions the world is grappling with right now. I know they are, because I have a newborn, and Lauren and I have discussions of all the time of like, you know, like, do we let her watch Coco Melon? Like, do we let her technology be part of her life like anytime soon? It's a heavy consideration, and there are a lot of consequences to what you could do. And for a horror movie to have the opportunity to like kill people as a result of your decisions, like, it's such a great idea. But I just don't think, like we're talking about, kind of like the choppy editing, the weird jumps between dialogue, like, it just, the movie never feels like it's spending enough quiet moments with people and getting to know them to let that steep and then to give power to the kills Megan is committing. You know, like, it's more, it just doesn't have that. It's too comfortable just letting everyone be a caricature and just letting like broad moments of dialogue set up this and set up that for there to be like real characters we care about and for us to be caring about any of the deaths that happen.
That is, as you're describing that, it is kind of, it feels like there's a dichotomy, or at least like two different movies. It's like you have these side characters that are kind of in the horror movie, while Katie and Gemma?
Yeah, what is it? I thought about that as I said it, and I wasn't sure. I think it's Gemma.
Yeah, Gemma are in more of like a family drama, which can work. There's nothing like inherently wrong with that, and the horror element and the family drama does eventually dovetail. It's just, you think about,
oh, bless you, child.
It's cedar season in Austin, and it is bad.
Cedars everywhere.
You think about the people that end up facing the consequences of AI, right? If we take a step back and look at Megan as kind of a metaphor, maybe we shouldn't, but you know, maybe they didn't intend for Megan to be commentary, but that doesn't seem right.
Well, then it won't be a very good movie then.
So if Megan is this commentary on technology and the role technology has in our lives, you look at the people that face the most severe consequences. It's Lydia, the neighbor, who we don't know anything about her relationship with technology. It's just she's kind of like a bad neighbor and doesn't do a good job of like being a dog owner. And then it's Brandon. And like, we don't know Brandon's relationship with technology. I mean, he takes Megan and runs off with her, but like, there's not much you can really derive from the encounter between Megan and Brandon in terms of like theme.
Right.
At least that jumps out to me. Maybe somebody could make a more specific case about.
Yeah.
Not with technology, but then you look at David, and David's also not a character that we invest a lot of time in, aside from just being like the hard driving boss that Gemma has to win over, and that when he's all in, he's all in. He's not even really all that villainous when it comes to like
just
wanting
kind
to
of a
push.
Dick.
He's a dick, right? But he's not like. He doesn't know that Megan could hurt people, and he's like, let's push it anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
Or does he know?
I don't think they're telling him. Yeah, they don't tell him, which is an odd move.
So it's like, even him facing consequences in the form of Megan, like, what is the narrative there between them? So it's like on the subtextual layer or level between all like Megan's interaction with these characters that she kills, there's nothing really said about technology, the situation at large. We see more of the impact that Katie has with Megan and the way in which her character kind of devolves and becomes more like the attachment that goes on, the anger. She becomes a little bit of a like a little child drug addict.
Yeah.
She's showing some real addict tendencies, especially I feel like they even start making like the bags under her eyes darker. Like,
yeah, and she keeps like rubbing her finger under her nose and stuff.
Yeah, just sniffing, so much sniffing. But you have some interesting implications with that, and with Allison or Gemma realizing that she needs to be present. And for her having been so tech-driven to realize the human element, I thought there was some really powerful stuff in their interactions.
Yeah.
And the way
it's
in
there.
Which, yeah, Gemma kind of has her about face and wants to make Katie feel like you are important to me. Like, I am looking at you. Like, I actually started to tear up when she heard Katie talking about Megan making her feel like she's the only person in the world or the most important person in the world. And you see the next time Gemma interacts with her, how much eye contact she's making and how focused she is.
Yeah.
I thought that was really beautiful, but it feels like you have a lot of these ideas that aren't necessarily coming together with what Megan does and the interactions she's having with people until I guess like technology trying to rear its head back into the relationship with Gemma and Katie at the end, but they still use technology to save the day.
Yeah. I'm a little in between, where the path you're going down and like, I'm thinking the movie is successful. Like I agree that the movie probably could be better and more interesting if we knew if AI, if technology tied at all with this little kid or tied at all in with this neighbor, like that there is potential there to like give the movie more body, but I don't necessarily think it needs to do that. Like again, Terrifier 2, I feel like this is just gonna become an episode in Terrifier 2. The thing I love about Terrifier 2 is we're watching the central characters of the movie really struggle with grief and the trauma of losing their dad. But I think the deeper thing in that movie is the struggle to understand what happened to their dad, and they can't anymore because he's gone. So the movie is just kind of an exploration of that, and a lot of the kills kind of stem from that. Like Gemma, I called Gemma. I forget the main character in Terrifier 2's name, but her friends all die, but her friends don't have anything to do with the main character's dad. like they have no connection to it. Their connection instead is to the main character and what she's struggling with. So the clown that's Art, the clown that's killing all of her friends, it becomes this this manifestation of like how trauma affects other people in your life. Like it branches out to them. So it's not necessarily that they need a direct relationship with Art the clown. They are just consequential deaths. And that's a lot of what horror movies do. And so I consider a lot of the deaths in this movie to just be consequential, to be the result of this deeper metaphor, defamiliarization that's going on. But I'm with you that like, you still can do more. Like there's way more Art and heart and meaning to Terrifier 2, because like her friends are so intricately part of her life. Where in this movie, they're just like assholes who get in the way.
Yeah, it's just, it's like the worst people that they encounter to get in the way, like have the deaths. And then Megan, I guess, is discerning when it comes to like the other lab techs.
Yeah.
Tess and Cole, she's lets them kind of live.
Man, it is a weird trend in movies recently, I've noticed. Like, I mean, horror movies have always killed all kinds of people, but like lately I've seen a lot of kid deaths in movies. Like Hereditary, Terrifier 2. I guess no kids do die in Terrifier 2. They're like high school students. And in this movie, like they kill like a little kid, you know? That's pretty crazy.
Yeah, I guess it's one of those like taboo line crosses. It's like a little more shocking because these days it's such like a, there's such like an online trend to protect. I don't know.
Yeah, but it totally works for this movie because, you know, AI, this particular situation does apply to like a parent-child relationship, and to see it like affecting other kids, like, again, a lot of potential there the movie could have explored.
Yeah. And I was thinking about this movie. I don't think we're going to agree on this aspect of it, but as I was watching the movie, we were talking about the expected tone and how I expected it to be a little like, not Barbie movie, but a little more upbeat, a little less, not even like less serious, like goofier. I just imagined that it wouldn't be as like grounded and heavy in dealing with
very like heavy
Katie's grief and Gemma's like struggle to parents. It reminded me tone-wise of The Invisible Man from 2020, which I don't think you liked as much as I did.
I liked The Invisible Man.
Okay, you did. Okay.
Yeah.
So I thought this movie was like, I feel like there's, you could put those movies on side by side and see similarities in tone throughout, like how seriously they're trying to explore some of the human element of an invisible man dealing with an abusive partner and the aftermath of getting out of that relationship and the way that it haunts you versus Katie's grief and Gemma having to suddenly be a parent when it wasn't part of her life. And how do you navigate this new thing? I liked that. It surprised me that it took that tone. It's just when I compare the movies and how much The Invisible Man really leaned into its premise and used that unique capacity of The Invisible Man to really play up the horror elements, whether it's when he's in the house with her in the early parts of the movie or when there's the huge like breakout from the psych ward and how kind of terrifying it is. All of that felt so like natural and cool and leveled up to me, where with this, it felt like it had a similar machinations, but more rudimentary. But
yeah,
I did appreciate the groundedness of it in some ways. It just felt like a clash with the expectations and where the movie could go.
Yeah. I mean, I'm with you on The Invisible Man. Like, to me, that's where Megan goes wrong, is that, you know, The Invisible Man is really infused with the main character's struggle and the fears she has. And the villain of the movie completely exemplifies those fears and constantly forces her to reckon with those emotions. Like, that's doing it right. Megan, it's again, I don't think it's necessarily a problem. It's just, I think it's a little tougher to make the movie hit emotionally and keep you invested if it's not doing those sort of things, which for a movie that isn't really doing that with the script, I think the script is kind of the weak part of the movie. Everything else about the movie is like, it is the CGI, the makeup, whatever Megan is, it's really impressive. It looks really good. Like, you're kind of, you believe it almost, like you're there with it. And then you have all of these small moments, which towards the end, I think the last third of this movie really saved the movie with a lot of the scenes you're discussing and Gemma really reckoning with her relationship with Katie and how important she is. Like, there are all these moments and the tone is really settling in at the end. Like, I think there's enough there that allows the movie to hit and ultimately leave you feeling something as you walk away. But I'm with you that it just needed to be infused with it more for a longer period of time. Like, you're right, The Invisible Man feels like that the entire movie. There are other reasons maybe that movie doesn't work quite as well, but like, that isn't really it. Like, it has that going for it. It has that foundation where Megan was kind of missing the foundation and felt like it was playing catch up a little bit and throwing in all these elements that didn't seem to be there, but then suddenly it's very emotional and it's carrying this weight. And yeah, I mean, again, all I had going for it was just like impressive technical work, you know?
Do you know what I wish Megan would have been like, or I think had the potential to be like, was that same energy of Cabin in the Woods? Were you a Cabin in the Woods fan?
No.
No? Oh, I love Cabin in the Woods.
Everything Joss Whedon touches is pretty awful.
That was a Joss Whedon movie?
Yes. Well, he wrote it.
Did he?
Yeah.
Oh, no. yeah, written by Joss Whedon and Drew Goddard. I like Drew Goddard a lot, so I always think of it as like a
what
a
did
Drew
he Goddard do
movie. Cloverfield.
I gotta watch Cloverfield again. I won't hate on that movie.
He wrote Cloverfield. He did, I think, the final touches on World War Z. And then he also wrote The Martian.
what a weird career.
I know, right? Cloverfield writer, Cabin in the Woods writer, director, World War Z writer, Martian writer, and then what? Bad Times at El Royale.
Oh, well, that's a great movie.
Yeah, that's one that you like more than me, but yeah. I like Cabin in the Woods, I thought handled it. Wasn't too silly. It wasn't like Scooby-Doo energy.
Yeah.
But was still like kind of cheeky, fun. Like, I thought Megan might be like that, but it did seem, as you're saying, that last third to kind of find a little more of that style and that energy with Megan dancing,
right?
I think is the embodiment of that dance. She's finally like letting loose in her vibe. Like, she can no longer be shut down by Gemma. There is like a degree of triumph there of like Megan discovering her voice and standing up for herself but being toxic as hell.
Yeah, and also like it becomes this representation of she's doing this dance that Katie taught her. Like, she's fully become in control of herself and is just hell-bent on protecting Katie and will kill anybody standing in her way. Like, it inherently has that, but as we've discussed, I don't think the movie does enough character work, like does enough foundational work for it to really hit and be moving in the moment.
Well, so what was your favorite part of the movie?
I think the last scene is great because, as we've discussed, Gemma, she's pretty terrible throughout the movie. She's just like constantly ignoring the fact that she has to now raise a kid that has gone through the most traumatic experience a child could possibly go through. And she's too busy worrying about coasters and looking at her phone and, you know, just like work stuff. It's incredible, incredibly negligent. But then to suddenly like start to realize like what she's created and what it's doing to Katie, and then to take on that motherly role, like all of that really hits at the end in a way that it left me it left me in a good state because, like, throughout the movie, again, like, I was just kind of like, I don't know if this is really working. And at the end, I'm like, all right, like, here's something. Like, this is hitting. Like, the movie's done enough to make this hit. Then, like, okay, I kind of understand it a little bit better. I appreciate the aesthetic of the movie a little more. I knew we'd get into this, but I love the whole last part where Katie controls the robot and kills Megan. Like, all that stuff. I love when movies really just kind of go for it, not really concerned with the logic so much, but just kind of finding a way to visualize somebody's relationship and something somebody's going through. And I think just everything that's happening in those last moments of the movie does it perfectly.
Travis, I wrote something that was talking about essentially the last 10 minutes of Megan ruining the movie for me, or like,
yeah,
leaving me angry. And it's funny that that's then your favorite part of the movie. Yeah,
absolutely.
Travis and I have been going back and forth. He's been trying to educate me, and I've been trying to wrap my head around the idea of post cinema.
Wrap your head around. It's very simple.
It's some of the elimination of exposition, like unneeded exposition, or finding like the exposition isn't as important as the visuals that are on the screen, or the expression through the visuals. Is that right?
Well, I mean, you could do a. It's tough for me to talk about post cinema in quotes because A, it's not necessarily completely defined. It's a very new term that's kind of being explored by film scholars and critics and stuff. And a lot of it actually involves, like, technically a movie can't be post cinema until like after 2000s, that the introduction of like digital. Attack of the Clones is famous for kind of introducing a lot of what makes up post cinema. So a lot of people say, like, you can't even consider a movie post cinema until after Attack of the Clones. But essentially, when you think about there's storyline elements combined as well. And yeah, that is the gist of it, that it's not necessarily less reliance on script, but less reliance on words. Like, words aren't a movie. You shouldn't listen to a movie. You should see a movie. You should experience a movie. So it isn't necessarily that, like, exposition doesn't matter, but there are more interesting visual ways to convey exposition, and that you don't always need to understand the real world logic of something because movies aren't real. They have crafted their own aesthetic, their own universe. It is an art piece. So we take the robot here at the end. How does this little girl know how to power the robot? It's ridiculous. If you think about it in just like reality logical terms, but if you put that aside because it's not a real movie, then you're able to think about it artistically and what it represents, that she can control this robot, and how it kind of solidifies her and Gemma's relationship, and how they're kind of meeting halfway through this technological space when technology had been to think tearing apart the whole movie. The idea is to stop thinking about exposition, logic, like, how does this make any sense? And just to kind of accept what the movie's giving you visually.
Which, some of the my complaints being a lot more classical in that way, or maybe it's just because, like, I'm more focused, like, I come from a novelist poetry background.
Totally.
It's very much like,
I just think it's another way to watch movies. Like, I don't think there's anything wrong with that. Like, it is classically the way we've looked at movies for a long time.
Yeah. So my issue, they set up Katie seeing Bruce for the first time, right? And when Gemma uses Bruce, she puts on these gloves and can manipulate Bruce's arms.
Yeah.
Or make Bruce move, control him totally. But Katie's facing Bruce and Gemma's behind her. So you never, as far as I remember, Katie never sees how Gemma operates Bruce. Uh-huh. And you can assume that maybe they use Bruce at other points in the movie. Like, maybe she got a crash course in using Bruce. But I would imagine with how quickly Megan's introduced and how much Katie, like, and Megan have this attachment, that wasn't the case. So the fact that Katie suddenly shows up piloting Bruce and defeats the most advanced AI
yeah.
in the world in hand-to-hand combat. I'm just like, this is ridiculous. And I feel torn on that because on the one hand, as you're saying, it's a movie, it creates its own logic and world. It is saying something with this, and I appreciate the broader like thematic implications
right
of that moment and what you're saying, that it's this thing that Gemma built, that one thing Gemma built was tearing them apart and this other thing brings them closer together, and it symbolizes this connection that they shared and a moment that they had prior to Megan being in the picture. But the movie's so realistic in a lot of its other ways. Like, the world it presents is very grounded, aside from Megan's like AI, or aside from the technology aspects, that Katie's suddenly like utilizing this robot just clashes with the tone of it. Where if it was something like Cabin in the Woods or like Scooby-Doo or something that's a little more like...
We just needed a talking dog.
Yeah, something a little goofier where I'm not supposed to take each scene as seriously. I would be like, okay, that's fine. Like, this is within the realm of just like the movie being like a little more unreal. Like, this is the end. If it was something that happened in This Is the End, I'd be like, yeah, of course Jonah Hill found like robot gloves and controls this giant thing and fights like the devil, like a giant devil monster.
We really diverged there because, like, I guess I don't really watch any movie or go into any movie expecting reality. Like, I never ground myself in that way. I'm expecting an art piece. Like, even when I go to a museum and I see a painting of a person and it is just a straight painting, like, it still has an aesthetic. It still carries the painter's vision of that person. Like, I don't think I'm looking at a photograph. I think I'm looking at somebody's rendering of a person. So, like, that's how I view every movie. So there's definitely never a moment in Megan where I'm like, oh, this is real life. Like I expect everything to be real and logical in this movie like it is in my everyday life. I guess I don't look at any movie that way, even the most, like, straightforward movies that are trying to present reality. I think I'm watching a story. I'm experiencing a piece of art. So I definitely never have that problem.
Yeah, it's one where, like, I don't go in expecting, like, the reality of it. But I think once it's established a tone of, like, this is taking place in the grounded world and we have this one heightened thing that you have to suspend disbelief about, but the rest of it falls. It's not like Katie's suddenly, like, flying around and has super strength. That would be strange. Like, but if at the very beginning of the movie you introduce, like, somebody has super strength and, like, this is what's possible in this world, I'm like, okay, sure. So in Megan, because everything else had been so grounded and logically consequential, or, like, presented realistically, I expect that same logic to follow with everything else. So when it's suddenly like Katie's controlling the robot, I'm just like, that doesn't make sense with, like, the reality that's been established. But that's me being, like, very pedantic and literal rather than...
I mean, you can refer to it as pedantic, but, like, I feel like a lot of people feel that way. Like, as you're going through the logic of kind of just the makeup of the way you're looking at a movie and what directions you expect it to go based on what it's doing, like, that seems to ring true for a lot of complaints I hear about a lot of movies that I love. So, which seems to happen constantly. So that makes sense to me. My big question though is, and I feel like this just gets to how you and I watch movies very differently, is, and I'm not saying you don't do this, but when I watch a movie, I'm really just looking for a pure emotional connection. Like, I'm thinking about the characters. I'm thinking about how the style allows those characters to become more full-bodied and to become a reflection of things I go through in life. And I expect the themes to kind of build from that, become stronger from that. And logic, like, I guess what I'm getting at is, those are the stuff I'm really invested in, which is why logic doesn't really come in. In your mind, at the end of the movie, even if you could make all the connections we've made between Gemma and Katie using this robot, it loses its emotional appeal to you. Like, you are less invested emotionally and connect less of the characters if the logic of the movie doesn't make sense. Like, if you don't see a scene where Katie learns to control this robot, the entire dynamic between Jim and Katie is shattered at the end.
It's not that all or nothing with it to where, okay, like, oh, that ruins it completely.
Right.
But it's more that moment, instead of feeling powerful to me, feels a bit more forced. Or it's almost like I can see the strings a little bit more.
Sure. Okay, I get that.
Which makes it feel like it takes me out of the moment.
It feels like contrived a little bit.
Yeah. So I still recognize the power of it. It still has an impact. And I like the idea. But it's something where I get more frustrated then by how they went about it.
That's so funny. Like, it makes me seem like, what's the right word? Like, I just want to sit there and, like, look at pretty images and be like, ugh. Like, I kind of am that way. Like, the logic, like, I don't know. I don't even think about that stuff. That's so funny. I just want, like, the pretty images. Like, I want I like melodrama, like stuff that's over the top. Like, I just want all the art I can possibly get thrown at me, and logic just gets in the way.
Well, and I think, to be fair, if the robot had never been introduced, I feel like you would have a problem with that. If all of a sudden, like, Katie appears with these gloves and is like, Bruce, and we're just like, what the hell? Like, where did Bruce come from?
Sure.
You'd probably at that point be like, okay, something.
Well, yeah, something, of course, because the thing you're right about that. Like, okay, you're absolutely right about that. That's a great point. But I think the main thing that would have been missing is the fact that there is an emotional connection that comes from the robot. If they had just shown Allison using the robot, or just shown Katie using the robot, that then later Katie uses the robot, there's no emotion there, you know?
No.
So, like, then it would just be annoying to me.
Yeah, so the fact that they, like, set up that emotional connection early on, I think trumps then the logic of, like, how did Katie use it later? It's like, okay, I understand what this represents.
Yeah.
And it has this power to it. So it's like, you're still down with the logic, just in a very different way.
Logic doesn't cross my mind. I accept.
I could tell you, like, when people are like, Chris, what's Travis like? I'm like, logic does not cross his mind.
Just say that. That's completely true. He's an illogical human being.
It's just an amalgam of illogic. Okay. So where did you end up? Do we talk about where we ranked it? What do we talk about now?
Let's talk about, let's go ahead and we'll do 2023 rankings, and we'll do all-time rankings. For people who, maybe this is your first episode, which it probably is, because it's the first movie we're talking about, that we have on our website, Film Colossus, we have all-time rankings where we're keeping track of every movie we've watched since we started those lists, which was like sometime in 2022. And we have yearly lists. So how about, let's start with 2023. Where does it rank?
So currently in 2023, I have it at number one.
So do
Might
I.
Might be surprising after everything that's been said, but we are recording this on January 11th, 2023.
Wait, how many movies have you seen, though?
Just this one.
Oh, okay. So I've seen two, so... Me having it at number one has a little bit more of a... There was a little suspense there. Like, was this or the Pale Blue Eye better?
Yeah, so you have this over the Pale Blue Eye.
Yeah, mostly because that movie sucked.
I'm like 30 minutes into it, and I feel like I would also have Megan over the Pale Blue Eye.
Yeah. I kind of think you might like it, though.
I mean... I'm 30 minutes into the Pale Blue Eye, and I haven't been liking it.
Okay, maybe not. I feel like there's stuff it does that you'll like, but I could see there being reasons you wouldn't like it. So we'll talk about it.
They just got, like, the Book of the Occult.
Oh, the occult.
It's just insane to me that Edgar Allan Poe is like a character. Like,
he becomes more of a character in the movie.
I mean, he's already very much in like every scene.
Oh, okay. So you're just laughing at him just being there, period.
Yeah, that they're like, you know what this movie needs? Edgar Allan Poe as a character.
They did some research on Gen Zers and they found that Edgar Allan Poe's really hot right now.
Is he?
No.
Okay. I mean, maybe. Maybe it's just like, yeah. It's one of the funniest things I ever experienced in high school, which is probably like a weird thing. There was a kid in one of my classes who, I don't know, I think maybe I was in an English class that was like a year up, or he was like a year behind, or maybe they just like showed his video to our class because it was that funny. But we had to make videos based on some, like the history of some artist. And I think a friend and I did Dressed Up as Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles to tell the story of like T.S. Eliot or something. Mm-hmm. And what this kid did, was it Ryan Bowling? He made a movie about Edgar Allan Poe and had everybody had little like stick figures that he was using that he had drawn. So it's like cartoonish looking people on a stick figure in a diorama and he's moving them along. And it's Edgar Allan Poe and he's looking at his like mother stick figure who's like dying in bed. And he's like, then the tuberculosis monster came and it's just a sock puppet with blood coming out of its mouth that eats Edgar Allan Poe's mom and rips her from the diorama. And then you see like a tear running down Edgar Allan Poe's face.
The memory of this movie has stuck with you, by the way. You're describing this perfectly.
We were all so blown away by what we were witnessing because we're seeing a bunch of other high school kids making these like awful movies. And he has this like kind of like well-produced movie. He actually ended up going to film school and making a short film that was like a bunker movie that I remember like kind of enjoying. But it kept going back to the tuberculosis monster. So it's just like Edgar Allan Poe then moved in with his aunt and uncle. And then the tuberculosis monster came and like eats them. And it's like, then he married his cousin. And then the tuberculosis monster came.
Are you trying to make us go over on time? Is this your tactic?
Kind of.
You want to be punished.
Every time I see Edgar Allan Poe now, I just think of the tuberculosis monster sock puppet.
Now I'm going to think of Dudley Dursley. Or what's his name? Not Dudley. Is it Dudley?
I don't know what you're talking about.
Oh, he's Dudley in Harry Potter.
Who's Dudley in Harry Potter?
He's Dudley in Harry Potter. Who's Dudley in Harry Potter? That's good. Okay. Isn't it that guy? Dudley Dursley? Am I crazy?
Yeah, Dudley Dursley. So I've only seen the Harry Potter movies one time.
I watch them every year.
Yeah, you watch them every year. I never read the books.
All right, so that would probably bizarre for me to be saying, he's Dudley Dursley.
I mean, there's probably a good amount of people that are like, yes, Travis,
yeah.
Yes.
Yes, he is. Okay. But yeah, anyway, Megan.
Okay.
What were we saying?
All-time rankings.
Oh, all-time, yeah. You want to go first?
Yeah, where do I have
how many
my
you
all-time
got?
Rankings? I have currently 73 all-time rankings, and I ended up putting Megan in the negatives category.
Okay.
So that's just below neutral. So neutral would be the equivalent of like 2.5 stars.
Sure.
So Megan's at that like 2-star range. It's at number 61 currently, just below Smile, but above Do Revenge and Minions Rise of Gru, which are both in the flawed category.
I have 4 times as many movies as Chris at 290. Jesus. I'm getting close to 300. And these are movies I've watched between 2022 and now 2023.
Yeah, we started this in July.
Yeah, but I did the whole year, though.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Okay.
I felt I just wanted to do that. So I put in the extra work to go do that. But I currently, so of the about 300 movies, I have it at 218.
Okay, that's lower than I thought you would have it.
Yeah, like I said, it doesn't fall into the good category, which is where most of the movies on this list for me rank. Like, I don't think it's quite achieving what it could, which is probably ridiculous in, for a lot of people to hear. Like, I saw some comment online, like, it's not supposed to, like, be deep. It's just the comedy. Like, I'm just always so annoyed. Like, it's, that is just a complete disservice to art. Like, all movies are trying to be something. Like, people just don't, like, zombie through a movie and, like, don't expect to say anything of consequence.
It's not even a comedy. Like, the funny aspects are really only, like, Megan's hallway dance and, like, some, like, darker humor, but it's not.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but, so, for that reason, I just, like, I wanted more from it. I was more disappointed. Like, I don't think it's necessarily bad, but I was very disappointed with it, like my mother often tells me. So, I have it in the Mrs. DeMar category, right beneath Pacific Heights and right above 12 Pups of Christmas.
What company? I do think the reaction, the critical reaction has been stranger than what, as kind of like a final.
Oh, yeah. I agree. I did not expect critics to like it as much as they did.
It was touted on Rotten Tomatoes as having like a 95%.
Yeah, it's at 94 right now.
And I get that the tomato meter, it's not, it's something to where essentially if somebody rates it like a 3 or better, yeah, that it's considered like fresh. So just because it's at 94 doesn't mean that everybody thought it was like a 5 out of 5 movie. It's just a lot of critics or a majority of critics thought it was like, but average to good.
A 72 on Metacritic is pretty high.
That is insanely high. And that I don't understand. Like, what's Invisible Man on Metacritic?
It makes sense to me because critics are largely garbage. So, like, I guess they see Megan and think like, oh, it's so much better than everything else that comes out in January.
Yeah, is it just like a January? Like, part of me has a little bit of that, and I don't want to take away from the filmmaker or like the people that put the movie together. Like, oh, how dare they receive praise? It's like, I do think there's so much potential for this, especially like I'm looking forward to the sequel, yeah, because I think that they can really go somewhere with this and make it what you and I hope it could be.
Yeah,
and I'm excited to see what happens next. So it's not like, what was the Don't Be Afraid of the Dark that came out with like the tooth fairy stuff back in 2011 that I like hated to my core.
Yeah.
It's not something like that, but the fact that it's been as praised as it has when it seems like it's a little basic or playing it safe and not taking the risks that you'd see some other horror movies, especially like we saw X, and you didn't like Hereditary, or not Hereditary, Barbarian, but I love Barbarian. Mm-hmm. Like, we've seen, I think, a number of kind of evocative and dynamic horror movies in the last year.
Yeah.
And Megan just kind of like pales in comparison to me. And the fact that so many people have praised it a little.
I think it literally is the whole circumstance saying, like, it's January. This was when all the terrible movies come out. Like, oh my God, here's a competent one. You know? I feel like that's all it is.
Yeah, like, it's fun enough. Like,
sure.
Go see.
The audience reaction, though, is a much more measured. 6.7 on IMDb, 79% on Rotten Tomatoes. Like, that is what I'd kind of expect this movie to be in.
Yeah. I definitely get why there'd be people that like are loving it, or like there'd be fans that really like attach to it, but just the critics have surprised me.
Although
Invisible Man was also a 72.
Oh, I do wonder though, does Gen Z connect with this movie at all? Because there wasn't enough TikTok dancing.
I do. That is a good question. Like, how much do they connect with it?
Connect with us. Hit us up on Twitter at Film Colossus. What's your Twitter account?
What is my
mine's PL_Bean.
Yeah, Chris J.H. Lambert.
Yeah, hit us up. Let us know. Chris is writing a movie guide article on it as we speak. Get in there, ask some questions, give us some insight.
Yeah. If you have questions, if you have thoughts, they can be included.
All right. We can stop the clock, right?
Yeah.
All we're right. at under time.
Yeah. Look at us. Professionals.
At the beginning, I was kind of like, 60 minutes is too much. Like, do people want to listen to us for that long? But we really do need that amount of time. Like, we'll just keep talking. And if we keep going over time as much as we've been going, something bad's going to happen.
I know.
We haven't decided, though, for anyone unfamiliar, if we go over time too much, we add up that amount of time. And once we've reached, 30 minutes, 60 minutes, mm-hmm. Something bad's going to happen to us.
Yeah. We have an idea, but we're still figuring it out.
Maybe we should ask the listeners.
Yeah, what do you...
Make it movie related, please.
Yeah. Or we'll just go with we'll see. Say things.
Okay. And we're here at the end of the show. What do we want to tell people to do, Chris?
Oh, go to filmcolossus.com. See our movie guides.
Join our movie club.
Join our movie club. That is also a big thing. You get recommendations. You get the latest updates on the movie guides we've been posting, the articles we've been writing, and every podcast episode release. You can also subscribe to the podcast.
Absolutely. And please check out our movie guides on the site. We really hope people become interactive with them and ask questions. Basically, anything you can comment below any of the movie guides, where we'll talk about themes, we talk about motifs, we talk about, explaining the ending. And if there's anything you want explained, if you have questions, we will respond. Like, this is all we do.
Yeah. So ask away, engage.
Yeah. And if you have your own theories, you can post those in the comments and we may include them in what we write.
That's right.
Wow. What a world.
Look at that. Interactive film criticism.
Also, if you'd like to support the show and hear these episodes ad-free, you can join our Patreon page at patreon.com/filmcolossus. Right now, the only perk is you can hear the episodes ad-free, but soon we're going to be adding more and more perks as the show grows and as we get feedback from you guys on what you'd like to see. And then here at the end, what do we want to do? What do we want to say?
Have a great day.
Have a great day. What's something like... Hope you enjoyed the show. That's like movie related.
Oh, yeah. Exit through the gift shop. I don't know.
All right. We'll figure it out.
Got a big question to ask.